Via remote, this is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said the White House and the Democratic majority House of Representatives are serious about finding a compromise on a second massive round of coronavirus aid for millions of Americans. Pelosi said she and Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin spoke by telephone Tuesday afternoon and that she hoped they could continue talks Wednesday after he returns from an overseas trip. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell committed Tuesday to bring any Trump-approved legislation that results from such a deal to the Senate floor for a vote. U.S. lawmakers have repeatedly failed to reach an agreement on a second round of economic aid to millions of Americans impacted by the pandemic. President Trump is demanding Pennsylvania get back to normal business operations at a time the state is in coronavirus cases. Mr. Trump committed comments in the western part of the crucial swing state for the November 3rd general election. Democratic Party nominee Joe Biden, a native of Pennsylvania, has also frequently campaigned in the state. Former President Barack Obama is to campaign for his former vice president in the Philadelphia section of the state on Wednesday at what is being called a drive-in rally. Polls taken in Pennsylvania this month show Biden leading Trump by just a few points and the race further narrowing. As always, for details on much more news, we invite you to join us at our website. That is voanews.com or the VOA mobile app. Via remote, this is VOA News. Soldiers open fire on Nigerians protesting against police brutality in the commercial capital Lagos on Tuesday. Reuters reports witnesses said at least two people were hit by gunfire. Thousands of Nigerians have demonstrated nationwide every day for nearly 2 weeks against a police unit, the Special Anti-Robbery Squad, SARS, that rights groups had for years accused of extortion, murders, harassment, and torture. The unit was disbanded last week, but the protests have persisted with demonstrators calling for law enforcement reforms. Authorities on Tuesday imposed a round-the-clock curfew in Lagos as the state governor said protests had turned violent. 18 fishermen who last week flew to New Zealand from Moscow testing positive for the coronavirus, underscoring the difficulty New Zealand faces in trying to import needed workers while remaining virtually virus-free. A total of 235 crew from Russia and Ukraine were on the flight chartered by three fishing companies. The company says it uses foreign crew because New Zealand workers either aren't adequately trained or willing to do the work. The U.S. and Russia signaled their willingness Tuesday to reach a new deal on nuclear arms control. They're discussing extending a freeze on nuclear warhead arsenals for a year past the February expiration of the current weapons pact. Russia proposed the extension for the so-called New Smart Arms Control Treaty. The U.S. State Department responded, saying it appreciated Russia's willingness to make progress on the issue of nuclear arms control. The State Department said the U.S. is prepared to meet immediately to finalize an agreement. Moscow said it was ready to extend the deadline through February of 2022 while a new treaty is negotiated. The new Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty, or New START, was signed in 2010 and imposed limits on the two countries' strategic nuclear arsenals. Well, Japan and Indonesia on Tuesday agreed to accelerate defense and trade talks over mutual concerns about an increasingly assertive China across the Indo-Pacific region. The defense agreement makes Indonesia the 12th country to arrange such a deal with Japan. Indonesia now is the latest country on Japan's list to engage in ministerial talks after the two agreed to have their foreign and defense ministers meet at a later date. For more news, please join us, voanews.com. Via remote, I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Batty in Washington. Today is Wednesday, October 21st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. ECOWAS says Guinea's election was transparent, but the main opposition says the regional group is protecting the incumbent.
As usual, the officials of ECOWAS are corrupt because they were here and they know what happened here in Conakry and in all the region.
We'll get analysis of a recent ECOWAS delegation visit to Cote d'Ivoire ahead of that country's election, a pledging conference to raise needed funds for the Sahel region. Kenya commemorates Mashujaa Day, and in the Nigerian state of Lagos imposes a 24-hour curfew amid continuing anti-police protests.
The curfew was necessitated because there has been breakdown of law and order in the state since yesterday.
And hungry stray lions and other animals roam rural communities in Zimbabwe. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Economic Community of West African States says the process leading up to last Sunday's presidential election in Guinea took place without any major incident. The regional observer mission concluded that the election constitutes a crucial step in the consolidation of peace and the promotion of democracy in Guinea. The group notes, however, that there is a need for authorities to improve in granting free access and campaigning to all candidates. But Alpha Bakar, the spokesperson for the main opposition presidential candidate Selu Darlene Diallo, says ECOWAS is protecting President Alpha Conde.
As usual, the officials of ECOWAS are corrupt because they were here and they know what happened here in Conakry and in all the regions. But we didn't expect anything from them. Those people are corrupt people. They are only defending the president in all the countries in ECOWAS region. Everywhere they go, they never take the proof. They are now manipulating all the results in favor of the president. Yesterday, they were meeting with the president. He is a candidate, but they took the time to get a meeting with him and a dinner with him. And we know that they have taken much money from him. This situation is a very sad situation for Africa.
Did the delegation meet with Mr. Selu Darlene Diallo?
Yesterday, they met Alpha Conde. They didn't meet with Selu Darlene Diallo. This is disgusting from ECOWAS official. And tomorrow, we will tell that to all the world because this is very sad for Africa.
Mr. Selu Darlene Diallo said that he was leading ahead of the count. Is that still the case?
It is still the case. And tomorrow, we will prove that.
You are going to announce...
Yes, all the numbers. The ECOWAS officials, they were here from 1 week now. They are violating our people. They never tell that. They know how the election is going on here. It is a region here that is favorable for Alpha Conde. There is no election there. No election. You can take, for instance, Kanka. The National Electoral Commission said right now, in front of that ECOWAS official, that 99% of the people of that region have voted. Nowhere in the world, 100% of the electoral people go to vote. When you count up what that commission have said right now, of the number of people that went to the vote, and the total, you can see 105%. And the ECOWAS officials were there. How can you get 105% and you say that is correct? The total percentage of all the candidates should be 100%. And they get 105% for Kankan. And an official of ECOWAS said it is correct. Everything is okay. Yesterday they killed 4 people here. It's okay. Tomorrow Selu Darlene will be president here. They will say it is okay too.
Alpha Bakar is the spokesperson for Guinea's main opposition presidential candidate, Selu Darlene Diallo. He was speaking with us from the capital, Conakry. An analyst says the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, will not succeed in its appeal to Ivory Coast opposition parties to end their boycott of that country's October 31st presidential election and to make sure that it takes place in an atmosphere of peace and nonviolence. An ECOWAS ministerial delegation led by Ghana's Foreign Minister Shirley Buchwe is in Cote d'Ivoire on what ECOWAS calls a preventive diplomacy mission. The opposition is boycotting the poll and has vowed to stage civil disobedience. Nyaka Lagokid is assistant professor of history and Pan-Africana studies at Lincoln University in Pennsylvania.
No, the ECOWAS will not succeed. The opposition has reacted and they said that the ECOWAS commission should be aware or is aware of the electoral malpractices of Alassane Ouattara's administration. So the ECOWAS is not going to succeed.
The Prime Minister Bakayoko has also met with some members of the opposition. He also called for them to end the boycott of the election and to engage in non-violence.
This is too late and that is too little. I don't think people will listen to him. Right now, Alassane Ouattara's regime does not have any credibility in the eyes of the majority of Ivorians. And then people are not going to listen to them. And then I think they will go ahead with the boycott, and which is, by the way, not in the hands of the leaders of the opposition, because the civil society started that process before the endorsement of the process by the opposition.
There were clashes on Tuesday in places like Kokodi between student groups. Also, there were reports of four transport vehicles being set on fire in Yokupon. What do you make of these developments around the country?
First of all, people have to know that Mr. Alassane Ouattara violated the constitution, and then he was not supposed to be seeking the third term. And then the Ivorian people have decided, you know, to take the destiny into their hands. But Mr. Alassane Ouattara does not want to listen to the will of the people. And then he wants to go ahead anyway and do this stuff. So he's sending his militia men. And there is a particular group called the Microbes. They were the ones who went to attack the students on the campus. And then some of them have been arrested. And this is what Mr. Ouattara has been doing, putting fear and then attacking and violence in the country, and some people are reacting. But the People's Power Movement in Ivory Coast is going forward, and then it's going to be intensified in the days to come, in the weeks to come.
Some people see a parallel between what's going on in Guinea and Cote d'Ivoire. Guineans had their election on October 18. What's your take on the Guinean election and the coming Ivory Coast election?
Yeah, in Guinea, the situation is a little bit of different there, even though those two presidents, one is 82, one is 78, they've served their two countries for 10 years, and then they want to violate, you know, the constitutions of their respective countries. But in Ivory Coast, we have to know that it is a little bit different, because people were looking for the opportunity to go and then put an end to Mr. Ouattara's rule. But in Guinea, we may see similar developments, but it may take a little bit more time over there.
Thank you very much again, Nyanka. So nice to talk with you.
Thank you very much, James.
Nyanka Lagoke is the assistant professor of history and Pan-Africana studies at Lincoln University in Pennsylvania. He was speaking with us from Washington, D.C. The Nigerian state of Lagos on Tuesday imposed a 24-hour curfew amid continuing protests against police brutality. The Nigerian National Police has also deployed anti-riot forces. The curfew affects Lagos, Nigeria's commercial capital and Africa's largest city. Boyega Akosile is the spokesperson for Lagos State Governor Babajide Sanwo-Olu.
The curfew was necessitated because there has been breakdown of law and order in the state since yesterday. It actually started day before yesterday. We've been monitoring, and Mr. Governor, Mr. Babajide Sanwo-Olu, has been pleading with the protesters to allow dialogue. In fact, in the last 12 days, what the governor has been doing is to dialogue with them, is to talk to them, for them to see reasons why there is a need for dialogue rather than confrontation. Now, what did we see? We just woke up 3 days ago. We discovered that the entire protest was being criminalized. Hoodlums have completely taken over. they were attacking everybody. They were attacking the police in all parts of the state.
I saw videos of running battles in the streets of Lagos, and I was wondering, okay, what is it? Because the protesters are saying that they are peaceful and that they're only asking for some police reforms. Are you saying now that it has turned into that?
Okay, yeah. Well, they'll tell you that they are peaceful, but in the true sense of it, I wouldn't agree completely. Because if you are calling for protests and some people are fomenting trouble and you are unable to control the people who are fomenting trouble within the crowd, would I describe you as peaceful?
24-hour curfew, that is a lot considering that the COVID-19 pandemic. Don't you see that probably this is more suffering for the people?
No. We have to quantify it. I think that, you know, the 24-hour or one day or 2 days curfew will not be too much of a price to pay for security of the state. We need to secure the state. The state has been grounded to a halt. That in itself has its economic implication. In the last 12 days, the state's economy has gone down drastically. So if we are going to use 2 days or 3 days to restore everything to normalcy, I don't think it is too much of a price to pay.
So you are saying that the protest has been, or you're suggesting that the protest has been hijacked?
Exactly. That is what we are saying. The protest has been hijacked, and the leaders or the people who are calling for the protest do not have, you know, mechanism to check the people who infiltrated their ranks to hijack the protest.
Now you're saying that the government has met some of the protesters' demands. Can you please go over them?
The first one is that they said we must release those who were arrested in the course of protesting. And the governor did that and ensured that 6 people who were arrested while protesting were released by the police unconditionally. They demanded that we pay compensation to the victims of police brutality in the state. The governor immediately set up a 200 million naira victims compensation fund to be disbursed to the victims. The third one is that they want justice. And immediately the governor set up a judicial panel of inquiry to investigate. It's composed of well-meaning Nigerians, trusted individuals.
Boyega Akosile is the spokesperson for the Lagos State Governor. He was speaking with us from Lagos. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, October 21st. The United Nations and European Union will hold a high-level pledging conference on the humanitarian crisis in Africa's Central Sahel region to raise $2.4 billion to provide life-saving assistance, Lisa Schlein reports.
The United Nations, together with Denmark, Germany, and the European Union, co-hosts of this ministerial conference, say they are encouraged by the strong showing of international support for the people of Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger. They call the meeting a substantial success based on the pledges already made and the promise of more to come. They set out to raise the profile of this region, which has largely been overlooked, and to raise awareness of the enormous needs of tens of millions of people faced with one of the world's worst humanitarian emergencies. And this, they say, has largely been accomplished. The Danish Minister for Development Cooperation, Rasmus Prehn, says the humanitarian situation in the Central Sahel region is rapidly worsening. He says people are suffering from rising insecurity due to armed conflict, increased displacement, the negative effects of climate change and extreme weather, and now COVID-19.
30.4 million people, that is one-fifth of the population in the region, need life-saving support and protection. This year alone, the future of millions is at stake. That is why we need to step up our efforts. We need to secure access to basic social services, justice, economic opportunities and security.
UN Emergency Relief Coordinator Mark Lowcock says there needs to be a comprehensive response to the Sahel crisis. Just focusing on a few areas, he says, will not solve the huge problems confronting the region. He tells VOA there needs to be a military response to deal with the terrorist extremists who are taking control of large areas of land. He says sustaining humanitarian assistance is needed to keep people alive, but bigger investments are needed in human development, education, water and sanitation, and other essential services. He says much greater effort and investment is needed to diversify the economy of the region.
Improving the efficiency of agriculture, freeing up more people to work in other sectors, especially towns and cities, and the economic development of the area to create more opportunities for everybody and to give people hope about the future so that it's clear that the nihilistic agenda of the extremists is countered by a better alternative.
Conference organizers agree humanitarian aid is not a long-term solution. They say emergency life-saving assistance cannot go on for years and years, and that durable solutions must be found. For this to happen, they agree governments, local communities, and the international community must address the root causes of this humanitarian crisis. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta led Kenyans on Tuesday at the 57th anniversary of Mashujaa Day, also known as Heroes Day. The day is commemorated each year to honor all those who contributed to the struggle for Kenya's independence, as well as those who have been on the forefront in making significant contributions to post-independence Kenya. As Atieno Odhiambo reports from Nairobi, Tuesday's commemoration was the first national gathering since the coronavirus pandemic. Outbreak.
Speaking at Gusii Stadium in Kisii Town, President Kenyatta used the occasion to highlight the plans underway to amend some parts of the constitution through Building Bridges Initiative. The president advised Kenyans against what he called constitutional rigidity and said that the time to change the constitution is now, 2 years to the general elections. He dismissed claims that the Building Bridges Initiative is aimed at creating positions for individuals who do not concede defeat after losing an election.
Our country is staring at a constitutional moment. The question at hand, and one requiring a constitutional consensus, is therefore, how do we as a people, as a nation, resolve the winner-take-all situation within a context of competitive politics as required by democratic practice? And on this, we should not give my suggestion the parochial interpretation of creating positions for individuals.
Also speaking was opposition leader Raila Odinga, who urged Kenyans to embrace the constitution review process that he said will put Kenya on a prosperous path.
You must change direction. For 56 years, you have followed one direction, but with not very many results. So we need to look at what else is there that is missing. Project Kenya can move forward as envisioned by the founding fathers of our nation. United, God should bless us. We should dwell in unity, peace and liberty, and plenty should be found within our borders. From here, Your Excellency, the BBA train will move to Kakamega, Ingo.
On the other hand, Deputy President William Ruto says he wants a robust debate on the Building Bridges Initiative to include the opinions of all Kenyans.
Your Excellency, there are millions of ordinary Kenyans who wake up early and sleep late, working hard for our nation diligently to make meaning of our independence and to continue the journey of making our nation free. We celebrate them as our Mashujaas. I guess we will have a robust national conversation that will bring everybody on board.
Officials also use the commemoration to roll out the Huduma card, which will give Kenyans easier access to government services. Cabinet Secretary for Interior, Dr. Fred Matiang'i, presided over the rollout.
Your Excellency, about 2 years ago, under the National Security Project, you directed that we commence the National Integrated Identity Management System. It's intended to basically integrate public personal data, or in Kiswahili, huduma number. It's my pleasure to report on this historic day that the process is now complete. Your Excellency, today, you and the First Lady will be the first recipients of the Sambo Huduma Card.
President Kenyatta and First Lady Margaret Kenyatta were the first to receive samples of the cards. The rest of the Kenyans will receive theirs after the Parliament vets and approves the appointment of the Data Commissioner nominee, Immaculate Kasait. Atieno Odhiambo, VOA Daybreak Africa, in Nairobi, Kenya.
Hungry stray lions and other animals roam rural communities, taking livestock and lives. Zimbabwe National Parks say such human-wildlife conflict is growing. Reporter Kuzai Navashe has more from Harare.
Lois Maiswa is a farmer based in Karoi. She narrates her loss of livestock to a lone lion that has been on a rampage in her community. She says, "We came here in 1968. We didn't have a problem of lions eating our livestock. It started 2 years ago. Now, I can say that lion is on a rampage. We thought there are many, but people from parks said it's only one." Tinashe Farao with the Zimbabwe National Parks says human wildlife conflict is widespread.
Human wildlife conflict is everywhere. It's happening in Binga, it's happening in Chiriri, Bikita, Plumtree, Wange, Lupane, you mentioned it. Since January, we have lost 55 people. At least 50 people have been killed by wildlife animals throughout the country. More than 40 have been injured. It's a national problem that we are facing.
Maiswa says slow official response times complicates the situation. She says the lion comes and wreaks havoc in the cattle pen, but we will be powerless to intervene. The people from parks don't come on the very same day. I reported on Thursday. They only came the following week on Wednesday. If only they could come on the same day of the report, that way the damage will be minimal. Farao says people are on standby to attend to such matters in the shortest time possible.
The long-term solution, our animals are overpopulated. That's why they are now invading the human settlements in search of food, causing a lot of problems. We need to depopulate with more animals.
Critics say human-wildlife conflict has intensified since the land reform program, which saw communities being put in places and passages where wildlife usually passes through during the change of seasons. Zimbabwe National Parks wants a sabbatical from international treaties and agreements that prohibit it from trading its wildlife or selling its ivory stockpile, saying the proceeds would help beef up conservation efforts in the country. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinavashi from Harare.
And that's it for this Wednesday, October 21st edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bubu music to hip life, bonga flavor to sukus, Afrobeat to Ndumbulu and Makosa to Kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clot, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important after-news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC.